Tech-topia. Tektopia er en podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi. Den er udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med Teknologiens Mediehus, HI-messen, Index Award, Innovation Center Danmark og IDA Forsikring. Mit navn er Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Tektopia. Nu hvor coronavirusen den har lukket Danmark, så sidder rigtig mange af os herhjemme og skal arbejde, fordi vi ikke kan komme ind på vores arbejdsplads, og i øvrigt ikke må være sammen med alle vores kollegaer. Det gælder også for mig, jeg sidder her på mit arbejdsværelse hjemme i lejligheden, og har investeret i et sæt hovedtelefoner med mikrofon, så jeg kan lave podcast herfra. Og i dag der kommer det faktisk til at handle om en masse gode råd til, hvordan man hjemmearbejder. Umiddelbart tænker man måske, det er meget enkelt at sætte sig hjem og arbejde med sin bærbare computer, ligesom man plejer at gøre måske en enkelt dag om ugen. Men når man skal gøre det hver dag i rigtig lang tid, og samtidig være en del af den virksomhed, som man er ansat i, ja, så åbner der sig en masse andre problemstillinger. Der var en ganske glimrende artikel i det amerikanske tidsskrift Fast Company, skrevet af Morten Mikos, der er direktør i firmaet HackerOne i Silicon Valley. Og jeg synes, den var så god, så jeg ringede til ham og lavede et interview med ham, og det kan du høre lige om lidt. Han giver en masse gode råd til, hvordan man som virksomhed håndterer situationen, at alle arbejder hjemmefra. Men der er en masse ting, vi ikke kan gøre. En ting er, at vi ikke kan gå på restaurant eller gå i biografen, men vi kan heller ikke tage til konferencer og høre spændende taler og møde spændende mennesker. Rigtig mange teknologikonferencer og andre konferencer i øvrigt også er blevet lukket og finder slet ikke sted. Og så er der dem, der ikke vil give op, som for eksempel Collision i Toronto i Canada, der har valgt at lave en konference på deres app i stedet for. Så de har simpelthen tænkt sig at tage 30.000 deltagere og lade dem deltage via appen på deres telefon i stedet for. Manden bag det måske lidt vanvittige forsøg, han hedder Paddy Cosgrave, og det er ham, der har lavet for eksempel også den store Web Summit Festival, der finder sted her i Europa hver år. Og det fine ved at arbejde hjemme, det er, at man bare kan ringe til alle de der mennesker via en service på nettet, og så kan man tale med dem, så du kommer også til at møde Paddy Cosgrave her senere i podcasten. Men først så skal vi altså møde Morten Mikos, og det særlige ved ham og hans firma HackerOne, det er ikke, at de er, jeg tror, omkring 300 mennesker, som arbejder på nogle forskellige kontorer, som nu er blevet sendt hjem. Det er, at de også organiserer mere end en halv million af de såkaldte white hat hackers, altså folk, som sidder og prøver at finde sikkerhedshuller i andre virksomheders IT-systemer. Så Morten Mikos har ved rigtig meget om at organisere rigtig mange mennesker på distancen. Og det fortæller han om her.
And HackerOne hacks you. So we hack you for good. We have freelance hackers in Denmark, Sweden, Finland, all over the world, Russia, India, Brazil. And we, our customers invite the hackers to try to break in into their computer systems. And if they can, they will tell the customer how they did it, and then the customer can fix those holes. So it's a way of saying, come and try to break in here so that I get stronger. I wouldn't call that really, they're not like employees, but then we do have 300 full-time employees in the company, and we operate mostly in a distributed fashion, but we do have offices. So some people go to the office, some don't, some switch between office and working from home. Right now, because of the coronavirus, we have decided to shut down our offices for the time being. So right now, we do not have office-based employees, but usually we have some who are in the office and some who are not.
You wrote an article in the magazine called Fast Company, and you have a metaphor for distance working, which you call the fishing village.
Yes, I'm sort of imagining a fishing village. Like, I have my summer place in the Finnish archipelago, and you could envision any place. It can be in Greece or, I don't know, Bornholm or wherever. And you see people who live in the fishing village, and every morning before sunrise, they go out in their boats, and mostly they are alone in their boat the whole day. And it doesn't matter what the weather is, they go out. They fish until they have enough fish and they come back. And all they have to collaborate is a VHF radio, so they can talk to their buddies. So they sort of mentally are connected, but they're physically on their own. And it can be harsh conditions, it can be rain and storm, they may find fish or no fish, and they're very much on their own. But then into towards the evening, they come back into the harbor, the fishing village. And then everybody's social, they have dinner together, everybody's together and sharing stories. But then next morning again, 2 a.m., 3 a.m., whenever, they go out to sea, and there they fish until they come have fish to come back. And I'm thinking that working from home today is like that. And humans have done it for tens of thousands of years. It's not even new. We have survived because we survive on our own. And we have a mental connection to somebody or something. So we don't feel alone, but we're physically alone. And there's no excuse for not getting your job done. Like if you don't catch fish, you have nothing to eat. And it should be like that. We don't need, like we are strong and we can do our work on our own. So I use that as a metaphor to show that even today, in this digitalized modern society, we are like that. We are social when we get together, but we can certainly survive long times on our own as a fishermen and women or in the forest or whatever metaphor we use. Goat herders, you could use any old metaphor. You can even use the medieval monks who used to live in small monasteries, and they communicated very deep thoughts with each other by letter. Like they wrote these long letters and it took maybe 2 months to send it to your colleague, and then it took another 2 months to get the response. But now when you read those letters, you realize that they are expressing the full range of thinking and emotions in writing. And this was 1,000 years ago. So then I'm thinking we can certainly work from home in today's world.
So if you take this metaphor and use it for a company who's in the midst of the corona crisis today, and the people who are working for the company, they need to work from home. How do you organize all these fishermen if it's a company? I mean, you're the CEO of a company. How do you organize it?
Yes, it is, of course, much more difficult if it happens suddenly, like for many public organizations and companies today, they were not prepared. They had to take the decision quickly. So many people don't know how to do their job at home, but it is possible. And my first advice is it starts from the top. The leader, whoever it is, the leader of a school or university or government or company, that person or that group needs to go all in, fully believe in it, do it, communicate, share their thinking about what's important. Because it's when you look back at all these metaphors I used today, why did they work so well? One key reason was everybody knew what needed to get done. If you're a fisherman, you know you have to catch fish. If you are a medieval monk, you know exactly what prayers and what goals and sort of the values and principles are very well described. And most organizations have them today, so you have to go back to them and say, why do we exist? What's important? And not be too tied up in the physical manifestation, but just think of what's the most essential thing to do. What is the essential thing a school does? It teaches young people some clear skills, but it is also a social construct. A school is a place to learn to be social. So then you have to ask, how do we train our social abilities if every pupil or student is at home? So you realize that it's not just about conveying the education. It is also about conveying collaboration. And then you have to learn digital collaboration and being civil and well-behaved digitally. So I think when you go back to the basics, you can figure out what you need to do if you have to do it from home.
And then you talk about promoting a digital culture, because how do you actually work together? How do you ensure that people still have sort of a friendly network that they can joke and meet by the coffee machine and so on?
Yes, I think it is very, very important, because we are all so well-trained and educated that we tend to just do the business, just do the task. And we think the workday is just about the task. And we don't realize that we are human beings at every moment. We are social beings. We are herd animals. So when we go digital, we must take everything to the digital realm. We can't just take the tasks. We have to think about what happens in a workplace. People bump into each other. They make jokes about each other. They may be angry with each other. They avoid each other. Like the many things they do. And you have to allow the same things to happen online. So what we do at HackerOne is we have a group chat tool that we all use called Slack. You can use any tool where you can type something and it's immediately visible to others on the same channel or everybody. So you get this sort of background chatter where anybody can say anything at any time. And then you can attach emojis, these small images, to express your feeling, your emotion about it, whether it's funny, whether it's stupid, whether it's provocative, whether you support it, whether you hate it. And so there you actually build the social fabric.
What if you are working in a company which is sort of like quite sincere, neck and tie and so on? Would you really use emojis then?
I would, because suit and tie, sure, we have that. But inside of it, we're all human beings. Inside of the adult body is always a child. Like many people deny it, but we're all children. It's just our body that grows up. But our mind is always playing. And if we deny that, then we can't be very productive. And sure, you can have channels where you're very formal. There's nothing, like, people also think that formal means that it's not genuine or authentic. I disagree. You can be very formal, yet very authentic in your communication. It's just the color of the communication, but it's not the essence. So if you don't use emojis, then you type your response. You say, I fully agree. But instead of typing I fully agree, you can click on the emoji with a thumbs up or a plus one. That means the same thing and it's quicker. But if you don't want to do it, you type, I fully agree, or I don't understand, or why are you saying it here? Why didn't you post it in a different channel? Like, you can do all of those. We are humans and we need to allow ourselves to be humans. And I'll give you an example. On this tool we use at HackerOne, we have a channel called Confessions. And we're not a church. We're a business. But we have a channel called Confessions, and people confess silly small things there every day. And it connects us to each other and reminds us of who the personality is. Because they confess things that just have to do with their life. We have another channel called High Five, where we show gratitude to somebody. If somebody has done something that we would like to thank them for, we can thank them there and say, thank you, Henrik, for this wonderful discussion. You saved my day. You helped me overcome a problem. You helped me solve a problem. And it has been shown scientifically that gratitude, it's one of the best mechanisms for feeling fulfilled and working well and being balanced in your life. So we give it a digital representation. And it's first, people are not really comfortable doing it because they worry they will say something stupid. But once it starts rolling, and that's where the leader must show example, it becomes a daily routine and discipline. And then Everybody enjoys it. It doesn't take much time. It takes a few minutes a day, but it does connect us back to humans who are working together, which is what we are trying to achieve here.
Now, you have already mentioned one tool, which is Slack, this chat cooperative kind of tool. What other what other tools would you recommend that you use in this in this communication?
I personally have a very relaxed view on it. I believe we should use all and any tools we think are useful. Some other people will very specifically decide which tools and how you use them. I believe in diversity there. But a tool I would recommend strongly is something where you can co-edit a text. Many of us who are digital immigrants who grew up in the 60s and 70s and 80s, we got used to working on our own and owning our own document until it is ready. But in the digital world, you can co-author and co-edit, and it is extremely powerful. So Google Docs will let you do it and other tools where you write the document and your colleagues may write in the document at the same time, or they may add comments saying, hey, Martin, why did you say this? Shouldn't you say that? And you forgot about this. And then in a short time span, you can build out a beautiful document, whatever you're doing, a letter or a marketing text or an instruction or something, or a decision document, and they can emerge very quickly and you get the commitment from everybody because everybody had the opportunity to participate in the creation of the document. You still need somebody to be the ultimate judge on what goes in and what doesn't. So the singular responsibility isn't lost, but it gives this amazing feeling of participation, which is so good for your own feelings and your productivity. So I would recommend that. And then, of course, I believe in email. I think we complain about email every day, but email is a fantastic innovation, and it's not really an innovation because it's just the physical letter that has existed for thousands of years that we brought into the digital world, and it's good. And when people complain about spam email and stuff, I think they're just complaining. You know, it's very quick to delete spam email. I'm happy when I get spam email because I can delete them quickly. It's much more difficult when I have to respond thoughtfully and it will take my time. So that's my view.
What about video conferencing and the podcast and stuff like that?
Yes, then you forgot. That's a good reminder that you need a tool for synchronous collaboration where you're all in the same space, a digital space, and communicating in real time. So video conferencing tools are very powerful, and there you must learn new behavior when you start doing it. It's not the same as meeting in a physical room. You have to shorten your statements so that more people can chime in. You have to have longer breaks between sentences so people can interrupt you. So instead of 40 milliseconds, maybe it's 200 milliseconds. I don't know what it is, but it's not a long time, but it's enough for a human being to step in and react. You have to be more actively engaging those who are in the meeting. So you have to say, Henrik, you haven't said anything. What's your opinion? So you have to involve people more actively. But then you can have large meetings. Like I was on one yesterday with about 200 people in the same meeting. Everybody had the right to speak. Everybody muted themselves when they didn't speak, but they could speak up at any point. And it was very productive. Nobody had to go to any particular physical location. And it took 1 hour and then we were done.
200 people, I mean, that brings me to the question of how do you actually scale solutions like these?
When you have that many, you have to use the paid solutions. there are free video conferencing tools, but they do not scale to that volume. So to be at that volume, you start paying serious money to them. But I find it's worth it because the cost of 200 people coming into one place is much larger. And it is important for humans to connect with each other. That's one of the basic things that humans do.
If you look into the future, what about a technology like a virtual reality?
I don't think much about technology as individual technologies, because I think it's not that it's irrelevant, but I think evolution will happen at its own pace. And I'm determined to operate distributed or remote organizations, no matter what tools there are. I know they're already good enough. So once we start getting augmented reality and virtual reality and all of that, I'm sure something wonderful will be possible that is today. But I also know that I don't have to hold back on anything waiting for it. We can be very productive today. So I take this pretty relaxed view on it, saying one day there will be something and I'll make use of it, but it won't change the course of our behavior and our business.
Do you think that this crisis and the way of working that we're experiencing now with working from home, do you think that will change the way we work when the crisis is over, when we have, when the crisis of Corona is over?
I do think that every crisis leaves its traces in society, and we will say that we are doing this today because 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 100 years ago, something happened. So there will be changes. I don't think they will be that enormous, because then I think the coronavirus crisis we're going through now, we've had pandemics before. Of course, it's on our mind because it's happening right now and the world is larger, but we've gone through them before. And we will come out of this as well in a good state. I also think that, or I feel I've learned over the past 20 years, that although I can speak for the remote working with all this compassion and belief and conviction, I don't think every human being will want to work alone from home. It is some percentage who is ready for it. Maybe it's 20%, maybe it's 30%, but it's not the whole civilization. Many people will say, no, I hear what Martin is saying, but I am going to, this moment I can, I'll go back to work. I want to see and touch and feel my colleagues. That's my life. I'm not going to be at home on a computer. So I fully understand that. And I don't think anything will change that predisposition. But I do think a benefit of a crisis like this is that it forces us to step up our game and have the mechanisms ready for whenever it might happen again. We take it very seriously now, the working from home, and we are reacting to a crisis. So there's a risk that we are serious about it. We should, of course, be very respectful of those who may contract the virus and we need to help. But working from home can be a very joyful experience. So I would encourage people to just remember to be themselves and allow themselves to be funny or caring or not perfect. Like it feels better when it's like we don't have to be like computers. Computers are zeros and ones and very exact and correct. We are human beings and we should be proud to be human beings with all our deficiencies and weirdnesses and uniquenesses, and we should let it play out digitally, not in a bad way, not in a disrespectful way, but in a humane way. So the fact that we have a tool which is very precise doesn't mean that we have to become robots. Leave the robotic behavior to the robots and let us humans be humans.
Ja, det var Morten Mikos fra firmaet HackerOne, og jeg skal nok linke til hans ganske glimrende gennemgang af, hvordan man hjemmearbejder eller fjernarbejder, som han har skrevet i Fast Company her for nylig. Men Men en ting er at sidde herhjemme og arbejde foran sin computer og løse nogle opgaver. En anden ting er at gå glip af at komme ud i den store verden og møde folk til konferencer, høre spændende taler eller netværke i baren eller ved kaffemaskinen med de sjove mennesker, som er møder til sådan en konference. En af de konferencer, som er blevet aflyst, det er Collision i Toronto. Den plejer at tiltrække 30.000 mennesker fra IT-branchen. Den skulle egentlig finde sted i juni måned, men arrangørerne har valgt at aflyse den fysiske konference. Og så tager de den app, som de ellers altid bruger til at organisere de mennesker, der går med til konferencen via. Den tager de simpelthen og bruger som platform for at afvikle hele konferencen. De mennesker, der står bag Collision, det er de samme mennesker, som står bag konferencen Web Summit, der hvert år finder sted i Portugal. Og den konference, der hedder RISE, som finder sted i Hongkong. Det er nogle relativt unge irske iværksættere, som for 10 år siden fik en god idé til at lave konferencer. Og det særlige, de har gjort, det er, at de bruger data om de mennesker, som kommer til konferencerne, hvilke foredrag man ser, og hvilke virksomheder man kommer fra, hvem man gerne vil netværke med. Så de har et ret godt billede af, hvad deres deltagere de egentlig er for nogen, og hvad de efterspørger. Og lige nok den viden, den bruger de så til at opbygge en konference omkring appen. Så den app, der hører til Collision, det bliver simpelthen platformen, som konferencen kommer til at blive afviklet på, og det kommer selvfølgelig til at hedde Collision at Home, fordi vi kommer til at gå til Collision hjemmefra. Jeg snakkede med Patty Cosgrave, der er stifter af Web Summit, også manden bag Collision, om hvorfor de gør det her, og hvordan de har tænkt sig at organisere det.
Collision is our sister conference. It is now in Toronto. It's maybe one of the biggest kind of tech conferences in North America. And it was due to take place in Toronto in June. But we decided last week that we would not hold it in Toronto. Instead, we would hold it online. Not because Toronto at the time had any issues, but rather that we felt it was likely a socially irresponsible act to bring people from 125 different countries to a single city, 30 plus thousand of them, in June. We just don't foresee any scenario where COVID-19 has fully disappeared. And instead, we've decided to do it online. And that's something we can do. We're a very software-focused company. We've always been building software for our conferences. And in the past, attendees have attended Web Summit and Collision virtually. They haven't traveled to the cities where they've been on, but they've attended them through the apps, connecting with speakers, connecting with attendees, connecting with exhibitors, and watching talks that they think are worth their time. And now we're going to do that for everybody. And for Collision, it's now been rebranded as Collision from Home, and hopefully tens of thousands of people from countries all over the world will join us online as opposed to in Toronto.
And when you say tens of thousands of people, I mean, how many people are we actually talking about?
Well, last year in Toronto, we had 25,000 people. That was our first year. We set the modest goal of bringing 30,000 people to Toronto for June. And hopefully there'll be a similar number joining us online. Time will tell. But we think, well, first of all, we can cater to 30,000. So hopefully 30,000, maybe more people will join us.
But and this is based on the conference app that you usually use when you are at the conference.
That's correct. Yeah.
But how will that work for 30,000 people?
Well, the software is scalable, so it doesn't really matter how many people use the software. I mean, in theory, a million people could be using the app. It doesn't really matter. I mean, you know, infrastructurally, 10 million, 100 million people could use it. The functionality remains the same. As an attendee, the whole purpose of the app is to enable networking. So we have spent a long time figuring out how do we help you as an attendee find people that you should connect with. So when you go to a conference with 1,000 people, it can be quite difficult to make sure you bump into the right people in the real world. But using our software, we try and tell you oh, these 10 people that you don't seem to know, we think you should meet them. And at the same time, we're pushing your profile and suggesting you to maybe 20 or 30 other people in the conference. And we do that in the hope that we can kind of engineer serendipity and increase the likelihood that you begin to meet people that you don't know that might be beneficial to your business. And then on the other side, it's very easy for us to identify people attending that you already know, and we'll tell you that they're there. You might want to chat with them, schedule a call, a video call or a voice call. And then on top of that, because we have so many speakers, we also make recommendations for the talks or workshops or keynotes that you might like to watch. And we surface that for you, and then you can add it to your calendar, just as you can add meetings to your calendar, and those meetings can all take place online. So there's nothing stopping 15,000 people meeting another 15,000 people simultaneously over the app. That's all. It's all possible with software, just the same as Zoom enables kind of conferencing over the phone.
But I guess this must be based on different kinds of data. I mean, data about what your occupation is and what your interests are and what kind of talks that you're attending.
That's correct. Yeah, exactly. So we build a profile of you. Most people provide us with they spend a lot of time telling us who they are, where they're from, and we from there begin to figure out who they might like to meet, and who might like to meet them. And it seems over the years that we've done a relatively good job. I mean, events usually take a long time to get to scale. It's not traditionally, conferences just take decades sometimes. So, I mean, CES is very famous, but people forget it's 55 years old. The World Economic Forum celebrated its 50th year just recently. And the real young conferences were started in the early 80s, like South by Southwest, or a couple of years afterwards at Mobile World Congress. Web Summit, for example, was started in 2010, and Collision was started around 2015, I think.
The reason why you have been able to scale like you have scaled from very few people in Dublin to these very big conferences on three different continents is because of the way you use data.
Yeah, I mean, it's a large part of it. I mean, the thing that people value most out of events, and we know this from our own surveying, but I mean, other surveys have shown it as well, is, you know, speakers are of course important, but they're kind of the icing on the cake. It's networking and the people that you can meet that matter most. Now, it's a distribution, so there's a percentage of people for whom speakers is everything. There's a percentage of people for whom networking is everything, and they don't care about any speakers. But for most people, the most important thing is networking, and then the speakers is kind of the icing on the cake. You know, let's say it's 60-40 or 80-20, and what we enable is for most people, your average attendee is relatively efficient networking by using software, and we've been doing it for quite a while. So this isn't something that we started kind of recently. It's something that we spent quite a long time doing. It's far from perfect. We have about 50 engineers and people in engineering related roles like design and product management in the company, and collectively they build some good stuff.
I'm not sure what it's like at Collision, but when you attend Web Summit and RISE, which I have also attended, a large proportion of what is going on is startups presenting their solutions and their whatever their inventions. So how will they fit into this app and this digital way of attending Collision?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So one of the most important things or valuable things that we know that startups get from the events is face-to-face meetings with people. We facilitate something called office hours, which are pre-scheduled face-to-face meetings between, for example, investors and startups. And those can still effectively take place. We're able to facilitate them, organize them, set a time, but as opposed to happening between a table, instead there'll be devices between people, and they'll be sitting in their own homes or their own offices, so they won't physically be face-to-face, but they'll be virtually face-to-face. So much of the same interaction can take place. I don't for one minute think that there's software will ever be a substitute for the richness of human interaction. I'm not one of those kind of believers in computers can replace the need for us to meet. I think we're the most massively social animal on the planet. The greatest fear we have for our parents and our parents' greatest fears if they're old is loneliness. We live to interact with each other, and no amount of technology will ever replace that. And so, while I think we can provide these solutions in a digital format, I don't think that's the future, honestly, of human business interaction. It can certainly be a feature of it, but it will never fully replace face-to-face interaction. And so, given the current crisis, I think it calls for creativity, and this type of creativity, I think, should surprise some people in that it works. But at the same time, we want to manage expectations. It will be far from perfect. Anybody that buys a ticket to Collision from Home will be fully refundable. And if they're not satisfied after the event, they can they'll be able to get their money back. So we don't want to promise the world, and we also want. Just want to manage expectations. So I don't for one minute think this will be a replacement or a substitute. And even at that, it will be far from perfect. I should be hyping my product, but I just want to be realistic. I think in these times, I think you have to be very careful about, it's a time of crisis. We're trying to do something creative, and hopefully it brings some value to some people in the world.
I noticed that you already have a lot of speakers on your website. How will they do their talks, actually? Will they also sit at home, or will you?
Yeah, they will. I mean, in the past, if we're very honest, Stephen Hawking spoke from his home, the late Stephen Hawking. Edward Snowden spoke from his apartment in Moscow. So we've been doing this already. And I mean, millions of people watch Web Summit talks each year. On the live stream, so we've been doing that part, and that part is it's quite straightforward. So many of our speakers, I'm sure, will be doing it from home, looking at how the world is going, but hopefully many will be back in their offices and will be speaking from their offices.
But I guess there is a possibility that you will have more than 30,000 attendees when it goes offline, because then you don't have to buy a plane ticket, a book, a hotel, and so on. So it will be cheaper to attend it. But what if you have like 60,000 people attending?
Well, yeah, they'll reach a certain point where I think our kind of infrastructural engineers will just say, that maybe we shouldn't go above a certain limit. I don't know what that is yet. We'll road test everything, because usage of the web of the Collision and Web Summit app is about an hour a day over the course of both those events. So if you think about that, it kind of peaks over an 8-hour period. So concurrently, the number of users on the app is always probably lower than the number of concurrent users we're going to experience. So we also have to be, I think, careful, not to fill it with too many people that we run a risk of the infrastructure itself breaking.
And but you still have to pay to attend on the app.
Yeah. So there'll be a I know tickets to Web Summit are €600 or €700, but I think tickets to Collision from Home will probably be something like $99.
Oh, sorry, how much?
And $99 US dollars. Yeah. So hopefully for a 3-day event, that's kind of $33 a day. Hopefully that's a kind of an acceptable amount.
Will it also be archived and accessible later?
I'm sure it will. Yeah, I'm sure all the videos will be accessible in the app afterwards. Because as is the case with Web Summit, we do that simply because there's sometimes 20 talks running at the same time. And one of the complaints we get from a lot of people is that, there's sometimes you know, speakers on two stages or three stages that people want to see simultaneously, and they just can't physically be in the same place at once. So they have to decide, and then hopefully afterwards we get those talks very rapidly into an archive for people to watch.
But how are you going to do the panels?
Just the same as a Google Hangout. We actually, all the way back to 2013, were doing panel discussions. We used to do these warm-ups to Web Summit, and we'd get three or four investors in a Google Hangout all the way back then. They'd be based around the world, and we'd just have a discussion for about an hour, advising startups on different challenges and giving them tips on pitching and preparing their deck and things like that. So, you know, all that technology, I think, is exists already. So we don't need to solve that part. I think the harder part for event organizers, and they're realizing that, is it's the networking component. People really pay to be in the same airspace as a lot of people from their industry. And networking is key. And hopefully, I think the software that we've built over many years enables that.
In the future, I mean, could you imagine a different software platform, something like virtual reality, to do these kind of things?
That's a really good question. I'm actually, even though I buy every VR headset that gets released, you know, I'm a hardware fan. I'm like a VR denier. I think it's amazing for some gaming experiences and some niche experiences, but I'm kind of waiting for mixed reality or augmented reality. Maybe that's the next breakthrough computing platform, but I've just seen nothing compelling enough yet to make me feel like it'll be a fundamental part of all of our lives. So I love VR, but I just don't think it replaces conferences.
Ja, det sagde altså Paddy Cosgrave, der er manden bag Collision at Home, en stor festival for 30.000 mennesker, der nu bliver afviklet via en app. Men der findes faktisk også andre festivaler, som er gået online. De næste par uger, der skulle vi alle sammen have været, i hvert fald hvis vi bor i København, skulle vi have været til Copenhagen Docs, en dokumentarfilmfestival. Der var nogle forskellige arrangementer, som Ingeniørforeningen Ida også var involveret i. Blandt andet så skulle jeg have været på et panel omkring en film, der hedder Robolove, der handler om robotter og kunstig intelligens. Men alt det bliver ikke til noget nu, men til gengæld så har Copenhagen Docs været rigtig flittige og visionære, og så har de faktisk flyttet festivalen på nettet. Så nu kan man se et udvalg af de mange film, der skulle have været vist i biograferne. Den kan man se på nettet. Det er sådan, at der er 1000 pladser til hver film, og det koster 45 kroner per næse at se dem. Og et par af de her paneler, de bliver faktisk også flyttet på nettet. Min gamle kollega Henrik Molke skal snakke med Edward Snowden til et arrangement, som Ida er medarrangør af. Og jeg kommer til at have en samtale med kunstig intelligensprofessor Thomas Bolander fra DTU. Datoen er ikke fastsat endnu, men du skal holde øje med Techtopias hjemmeside, techtopia.dk. Og så kommer jeg også til at have et panel og en samtale med nogle forskere omkring filmen Robolove. Desuden vil det være sådan, at Ida har reserveret et antal billetter, både til kunstig intelligensfilmen iHuman og til filmen Robolove, der handler om robotter og vores forhold til dem. Så du skal holde øje med Ida.dk, og du skal holde øje med Techtopia.dk for at få de nærmere informationer om, hvordan du kan få en billet til en af de to film og se den online, og desuden deltage i diskussionspanelerne, som vi regner med at afvikle via det værktøj, der hedder Zoom, som er sådan et møde-video-værktøj, som i øvrigt også er det værktøj, jeg har brugt til at lave de to interviews i dagens podcast. Det var en masse snak. Vi har også fået et podkort fra Ingeniørens podcast Transformator.
Er det her en sæsoninfluenza, eller er det en epidemi, der tåler sammenligning med den spanske syge? Og hvorfor er det lige, at corona ikke kan lide den danske sommer? Vi er med på coronabølgen, men som altid med en ambition om at forklare de mange spørgsmål, andre medier efterlader. Og så skal vi altså ikke lige glemme ugens anden vigtige historie. Klimarådets rapport til regeringen, der kommer med anbefalinger til de tiltag, der skal nedsætte Danmarks CO2-udslip med 70% inden 2030. Eksperterne, de er sikre på, hvad der skal til, og de kommer hele vejen rundt med rapporten. Men nu er politikerne alligevel ikke sikre på, om de kan lide beskeden. Hør forklaringen og gennemgangen i denne uges Transformator.
Du har lyttet til Techtopia, der i dag blev produceret hjemmefra som hjemmearbejde eller distancearbejde. Du kan som altid skrive til mig på henrik@techtopia.dk. Du kan finde links på techtopia.dk. Du kan følge podcasten på Twitter på @techtopia.dk. Og så kan du deltage i diskussionen i vores Facebook-gruppe Techtopia Backstage. Der bliver diskuteret rigtig meget corona for tiden og en masse forskellige løsninger og idéer omkring, hvad man kan gøre ved det og hvordan det kommer til at udvikle sig. Så det er bare med at hoppe ind på Facebook og Techtopia Backstage og være en del af den diskussion. Jeg skal også lige gøre opmærksom på, at jeg har lavet en podcast til Radio 4, der også handler om fjernarbejde. Den kan du finde på radio4.dk/programmer/Techtopia. Her kan du blandt andet møde antropologen Rikke Ulk, der snakker om, hvad det betyder for os at gå til konferencer og møde mennesker i det fysiske rum. Så kan du møde den danske virksomhed Baymart Institute. Der består 17 mennesker, der aldrig nogensinde har siddet på det samme kontor, men altid arbejdet hjemmefra med hinanden. Og det kræver en helt speciel måde at organisere sig på. Og så skal vi også høre lidt om, hvordan man på Københavns Universitet griber det an, når man skal til at hjemmeundervise folk. Det var Techtopia for denne gang. På genhør i næste uge. Techtopia er en podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi. Den er udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med Teknologiens Mediehus, HI-messen, Index Award, Innovation Center Danmark og IDA Forsikring. Mit navn er Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Techtopia. Techtopia.